You're listening to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com.
It's Sunday, July 15th, 2012, and this is the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Joining us today from AlexisGuide.net, Alex Heberling.
Hello, hello.
From LateBunny at LateBunny.com, Kurt Kimball.
Greetings and salutations, Internet.
Our news editor, Jason Strasberg.
Hi, hope you're having a great Friday the 13th weekend.
And joining in live from San Diego Comic-Con, I'm Thomas Revor from 910 Comics. That's 910CMX.com. And here's the news this week. Jason, what's our top story?
All right. Tom, in our top story this week, we will be focusing on the recent announcement by Penny Arcade that they're going to start a Kickstarter. The objective for this Kickstarter is basically to scour the ads from their site. There are several funding goals lined up. The smallest is $250,000 to eliminate the leaderboard from their website, and it was reached shortly after the Kickstarter opened. Each goal in the project is structured to restore old services and that they used to offer and convert the entire site to a Creative Commons license. Now, if Penny Arcade reaches their top goal of $1 million, ads will be completely removed from their site for 1 year, and when the year ends, Gabe and Tycho plan to start another Kickstarter to fund themselves for 2013. I'm sorry, that would be 2014. The pledge reward tiers go from $1 to $10,000, with the most basic being that the donor's name is listed on their sponsor's page, and Gabe will shout out their name while chasing a duck. By the way, there are currently over 4,000 backers with 31 days to go. So all I'm saying, Gabe, Tycho, you may want to invest in more than one duck. As the Penny Arcade has reached, it currently has reached just a little over $260,000, and the story is covered by both Forbes and Bloomberg. So even if they don't reach their final $1 million goal, enough buzz has been generated that they may be able to make this kind of thing a common practice. So that's our top story, Tom. Back to you.
Thank you. And we're going to head over now to Alex. Alex, we've got some continuing news alerts, don't we? What's going on there?
Yes, we do. And continuing news this week, we have a few more items from the Oatmeal versus Funny Junk case, specifically the Inman versus Charles Carrion kerfluffle, I think is a good way to put it. First off, the money that was actually raised totaled more than $200,000, which is 10 times the amount that Charles Carrion's initial letter was asking for in damages. Over on boingboing.net, there is a photo set of Inman setting up the money for the photo that was promised in the initial response to Carrion's cease and desist sort of thing, including an amusing photo of Inman's face with the money stacked up in the background. And then over on the Carrion side of things, we've got a couple items about sort of the aftermath. Charles Carrion still does not done with the oatmeal and has set up the delightful website named Reputation with a rebuttal video.
Let me interject. What did you call that?
Reputation.
It's a website.
That.
Oh, boy.
Which, and he's basically wants to try to get legislation passed that would enable somebody to press charges or file a lawsuit whenever, you know, against somebody who incited a mob of internet trolls as what happened with him. We've received that through Boing Boing over on ArsTechnica.com, so you can read the whole story over there. And furthermore, Carrion seems to be taking credit for raising money for the charity. The National Wildlife Foundation and the American Cancer Association, I believe is what they were. Over in an interview from the Today Show over on today.msnbc.msn.com. "While it's not the largest sum of money I have ever had a substantial role in raising," he wrote, referencing the $211,000 collected by the fundraiser, "it is the first time I've seen it go to charity, and I think that's great."
I am completely agog at that. There's nothing more that can be said until we reach the discussion period.
Yep. And with that, I think we'll just head on over to the buzz section. We've got two stories in buzz this week. First up, CompanyCon is go. This is over on somethingpositive.net. Since Randy Milholland did not go to CompanyCon this weekend, he decided to have a virtual convention called CompanyCon, so named because they would be doing all the programming and stuff in their pajamas or whatever they're comfy wearing while they do that. Randy had a one-hour panel. Daniel Corsetto joined in and gave a two-hour panel via like live stream and Ustream and all that kind of fun stuff. And other creators attending were Aaron Diaz of Dresden Kodak, Anthony Clark, Angela Medlick, Bill Barnes, and Howard Taylor. So you can go check out what went on with that over on somethingpositive.net. And next up, the Will Eisner Comic Industry Award winners have been announced for 2012. The best digital comic was Battle Pug by Mike Norton, which can be read at battlepug.com. That's it for Buzz.
Well, can I interject something, Alex?
Sure.
Best inker and drawing went to Ramon Diaz for the Sands project they had pushed it. So we should give him some congratulations too. You should know him from Butternut Squash webcomic and a few others, but it's amazing work.
Yes. Congratulations to all the winners and nominees, of course.
And now let's go ahead and head over to Eric. Eric, you've got some news in the business world. What do we have?
Our first story comes to us via Comics Alliance, and this is regarding Top Cow launching a Kickstarter. While launching a Kickstarter for a comic may seem sort of ordinary, Top Cow's Mark Silvestri is planning to bring Cyberforce, one of Top Cow's top-selling books from the 90s, back into the print. The twist of this is that the Kickstarter is to fund the book, and they will release the comic both digitally and in print for free if the campaign is successful. The plan is to release the first five books for free and then presumably charge for the books after this. Silvestri is quoted as saying, "We figure this is a great way to reward loyal comic fans, plus to get new people on board for reading the comic and see what they've been missing. Plus, it also allows fans to actually get involved in the comic making process and be part of something that is truly groundbreaking that will help us, all of us that love the genre." So it's something to keep in mind, eye on. This sort of launching and giving out of a free comic to launch a series may be something that we'll see more of in the future. Moving on to digital comics, Diamond, the main distributor of print comics to comic book stores, announces that on July 23rd of this month, they will be releasing a digital service similar to the Comixology app and others to distribute comic books digitally. They're a little late to the party on this one, but this is something that they're doing recently. And our fourth story today is talking about is coming to us from GigaOM, and this is the future of Twitter as a media company. This analyzes Twitter's media content and how they're going to move forward in the future. One of the points that's brought up is that Twitter is not particularly a media company, but a republisher of media. And their recent moves to allow stuff like magazines to have larger articles posted in the Twitter shows the way they're trying to go, and also brings forth some of the trials in that Twitter is not producing its own content, but using other people's content to promote their own business. Last business news for today is coming to us from Publishers Weekly, and it's news that if you look at the numbers and the money raised, Kickstarter is the second largest graphic novel publisher. This is second only to DC in graphic novel publishing. And if you consider that Kickstarter isn't a sales medium, but a way to raise funds, and the books that are actually produced can be sold further, it may even put them above, and I did make a mistake, it's not second to DC, it's second to Marvel, and it may even put them above Marvel, making Kickstarter the largest publisher of books in the country. So that's something to take note of. Kickstarter is continuing to dominate with their method of crowdfunding. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Eric. Okay, Jason, we had a little bit of coverage of the legal news with our favorite person, Charles Carrion, but we've actually got some news that doesn't involve him. What do we have?
And thank God. Two stories in legal news this week. First one is an article from Paid Content that is titled Internet Freedom Buffet, which really is pretty bad, but the article is pretty good. We're given a breakdown of the three internet movements currently running to quote, preserve the revolutionary spirit of the internet. Now, as you may know, pretty much as the week of July 4th, we saw several of these movements coming out. I believe that the first one had come from the Declaration of Internet Freedom, so boing, boing. Readers probably already aware of that. The article gives a quick rundown, actually a good rundown, still quick but good, of what's going on with all three of these movements. And I'm just going to give you a short synopsis real quickly. The first one, as I mentioned, is the Declaration of Internet Freedom. This was generated by Silicon Valley. Pretty much the people will shut down things like ACTA. It's backed by a lot of people who are, you know, pretty much internet savvy, but there's nobody. The con of it is that they're not really getting to anybody who hasn't already heard it before. I think that, like I said, if you read Boing Boing, you already know about it. Outside of that sphere, I doubt it. Next is the Technology Revolution. Quote, this is the title, The Technology Revolution, A Campaign for Liberty Manifesto. This was brought to us by people such as Representative Ron Paul out of Texas and Senator Rand Paul out of Kentucky. And it's pretty much sponsored by people from the Libertarian Party. There really aren't a lot of pros to that. And the cons are that it's sponsored by people, or it gives people like Microsoft, Comcast, companies like that, keys to the internet, if you read it in some ways, and possibly it could be catastrophic. And then finally, we have the third movement, which is, one second here. The third movement was brought to us actually outside of the United States, is basically sponsored by the countries outside the U.S. And the big problem with it is that it promotes sort of an anti-American campaign, and it wants to generalize freedoms of the internet. And, you know, as from our perspective in the U.S., it's not really helpful. So take a look at the article. It's something you should read if you really want to keep in touch with what's going on with internet freedoms. Our next article basically stated that the ITU wants to control the internet. What we have here is an explanation of WCIT 12. This is a Congress organized by the International Telecommunications Union, also known as the ITU. Now, short history on the ITU. The ITU has been around since the late 1800s. It's a basically a conglomerate of different organizations around the world. This is not just a U.S. organization. This is a global organization. And they basically give guidelines for different telecommunications laws. They basically sell bandwidth for satellites. It's been around for a long time, and they've had a very steady and strong hand in how regulation gets done in telecommunications. What's happening is that the ITU wants to have a Congress in order to set itself in a position that would basically make them a global regulator of the internet. Now, if Dom Robinson, the writer of this article, is correct in his assumptions, the results could be really scary. Chiefly, this could mean a possibility of mercantilism, which is basically installing false boundaries on the internet to enforce trade models that could be set up on it. So mercantilism on the internet. And it could also bring about an end to, you know, the free trade that we see as basically denizens of the internet. So I heartily encourage you to read this article and just take a look at it and keep it in mind, because things will change. You know, we shut down ACTA, we shut down bills in the U.S., but this is a global movement. All right, and that is it for legal. I'm going to hand it back to you, Tom.
Thank you there, Jason. And we're going to go ahead and take our first break. We'll be back with more news and then our discussion period right after this.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. And now let's go ahead and take a look what's in our education with Alex. Alex, go ahead and educate us.
I got an education. We have just two items in education this week. First, We versus I on Feld.com, which comes to us via Jason Hirschhorn's Media Redefined feed, talking about the use of we versus I when it comes to interacting with your collaborators and company and reacting with other people outside them. It generally advises, you know, remember that there are other people that are supporting you in your endeavors and whatnot, so make sure you include them when you're talking about these kind of things, and everyone will be much happier. And then over on Cleefield on Comics, our wonderful, beautiful, delightful friend Sean Cleefield shared this link with us about Michael Dambold's series on color theory and comics, which is over on michaeldambold.com. It is a multi-part series of blog entries. The first one is an introduction to color theory, the elements and principles of design. And the second part goes into color harmonies and values. And the next part coming up is going to discuss the principles of design and using color in compositions. So if you don't know anything about color theory, this is a really, really good place to start. And that is it for education.
Terrific. It's been a while since we've had Sean on the show. Eric, Jason, you think you can get him on the show soon?
We'll look into it.
He doesn't talk to okay. me. Yeah, there was the problem. Or never mind, you probably shouldn't know.
He's so dreamy.
I think I owe him money.
And speaking of dreamy, let's go ahead and have Eric take a look at the tech division while I'm on location. Eric, what's happening in the tech world?
I'm sorry, I'm a little shocked by Dreamy and my name being in the same sentence, but we'll go on.
Never happened before, right?
Never happened before.
But, or again.
Yeah, strangely enough, the universe didn't implode, so we will move on. In our tech section, the first thing coming to us from GigaOM is talking about Dropbox increasing their space allotment for the pro users. Dropbox, as you know, is a cloud computing storage that allows people to store their information online. Now, we now have from Dropbox, in face of competition from places like Amazon, them increasing the amount of data that they're allowing their pro users, which are their pay users, to put online. This is showing a sort of a burgeoning war of the cloud space computing, and we'll see who wins in the end. But things are going to get a little cutthroat from here on out. Next thing also coming to us from GigaOM is a little talk about a ruling by the European Court that says it is legal for customers to resell their downloaded software. Now, this is a European-only ruling, but what that basically means is when you download an app on your phone in Europe, you're allowed to sell that app to someone else, provided that you remove it from your phone. There are not really a lot of methods to do this, but if you figure out some way, you are not breaking any laws. This could get a little messy, but they also note that as things move more to cloud computing and services online, it becomes less of an issue since you don't download those and don't have possession of those at any point. Our third story coming from Gizmodo, and actually, Jason, could you cover this for me because I didn't spot this?
Oh, okay. This is the technology issue. I'm sorry, but this was a late addition to the news. Basically, over at Gizmodo, they are announcing that a laser-based technology is being set up. The chances of it actually being used are pretty good. And what it can do is that from over about 100 feet away, someone monitoring you or anybody coming, say, towards the gate at the airport can get a read on you about pretty much everything that you carry. It will look for its basis is to avoid people bringing bombs on planes. So it will look for small microscopic evidence of that, but it can also go down to an organic level. So perhaps you're carrying drugs, or it will know what you've done in the last couple of weeks. It's really an announcement on another going over the boundary of personal security. So take a look at it. It's really scary. It sounds something like out of a dystopian sci-fi novel, and I don't want to see it happen. So have a look. That pretty much covers the article. And that's the end of tech. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you, Jason. Actually, I'm going to hand it right back to you because you've got some tidbits for us, don't you?
Yes, sir. Okay, two tidbits this week. First off, from Robot 6, we are told that Comixology and Bongo Comics will be launching a Simpsons comics app. Actually, they announced it during San Diego Comic-Con. The launch will have 20 Simpsons comics and a free copy of Simpsons Comics 100. It'll also be available for a short time at Comixology.com. It doesn't look like there will be any same-day releases for the print as the print comics, though. So that's coming out. And then our second story is along the lines of releases from Bleeding Cool. We're told that Neil Gaiman has confirmed a new 6-issue Sandman miniseries in the works for 2013. J.H. Williams III will be doing the art, and I believe that it's going to be set as sort of a prequel. So I that sounds a little scary, but I think I'm still going to buy it. All right, and that is it for tidbits. Back to you, Tom.
Thank you. And since I'm coming here from San Diego, I'm going to give us some of the oddities this week. Our top oddity is something that I saw over here at Comic-Con, and that is a company called Nico Mini has created brain-operated cat ears. Yes, these little battery-operated cat ears you sit on top of your head have a little sensor that comes down, attaches to you, and reads your brain waves and has the ears manipulate themselves in response to what you're thinking or feeling. Personally, I think it's a little bit of a scam. I put them on, and they didn't work at all.
But
of course, that may be, yes.
You do know they register brain activity, Tom. I'm just saying. That's
it. Yes, well,
wah.
I work at web comics. They don't have a brain at all, so. Don't make me start singing If I Only Had a Brain. Next up in our oddities, we've got something that everyone has demanded. That's 493 Pokemon drawn as sexy anime girls. Why? Why not? You can find that over at ComicsAlliance.com. And finally, if you've ever wanted to smell like your favorite babe chaser and girl magnets, yes, we're talking about Archie Andrews. Archie Comics has teamed up with MAC Cosmetics to create a perfume called MAC Archie Girls. Both companies' products are sold worldwide, and the partnership made, as they say, for a natural fit as the pinup girls, such as Betty and Veronica, and many others have always been iconic. This will be available next spring. I know that we are all waiting with bated breath for that. And we're going to take this and segue right over to something else that makes us cry. What do you have, Eric, that's making you cry this week?
All right. Well, as you may or may not know, Viacom has been in contract negotiations with DirecTV. Viacom, publisher of popular shows like MTV, Daily Show, Colbert Report, and they have been negotiating with DirecTV trying to get more money. DirecTV doesn't want to give them more money. This is our standard contract negotiation. So Viacom has pulled their shows from DirecTV. In response, DirecTV said, "I apologize for the inconvenience, but you can get the shows from Viacom's website." Viacom, in response, responded as any 13-year-old child would and rage quit the internet. In that they pulled all of their shows from the net, saying, DirecTV, if you're going to tell people to come to our website to enjoy our product, we're just not going to allow anyone to see it. Now, this is an attempt to, I'm assuming, punish DirecTV, but it also punishes anyone who views Viacom shows online. It also costs them money because they're losing out on the publishing and gets them a whole lot of ill will. It seems like an incredibly stupid idea, and I would be shocked that the company would do this, but this is also the company that periodically trolls YouTube so that none of their content ever shows up on YouTube in any way, shape, or form. They don't want the internet. They are grudgingly on the internet, but as soon as it seems inconvenient, they pull their topics. It's dumb. And that's what makes me upset this week. Back to you, Tom.
And on that, folks, we are not rage quitting. We are taking our second break, so we will be back with our discussion portion of the period right after this.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter for news links as we find them at WebcomicZ. Email us at webcomicbeaconnews@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-320-310-0922. Love the show? Please grab the iTunes or RSS feed. We're also on Stitcher.com with Stitcher Smart Radio, an on-demand service where you can stitch podcast and radio show feeds together for your own personal streaming service. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity in the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic books, news, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, and we've got a show full of guests today for our discussion panel. Starting off, we want to welcome back two of our favorite guests, coming to us from the Animation Aficionados podcast, Ben Carver.
Hello.
And thanks for the fast work to our news department, coming to us from MTV's Geeks, Clefield One Comics, Sean Clefield.
Hello, hello, hello.
As well as our regular newscasters, Alex Heberling.
What's up?
Eric Fumble.
Greetings.
Jason Strasberg.
Hello.
And myself, Thomas Revor. And now, what do we have to discuss today? Well, of course, our top story had to be discussed about, and that is Penny Arcade using Kickstarter to help fund an ad removal program and a few other benefits from their site.
Yeah. Can I say something here, Tom? I mean,
absolutely.
I like the Kickstarter thing, but if only there was some way to put a button on the site that would allow people to donate money to you for a reward. I mean, I just wish we had that sort of technology instead of going through the Kickstarter.
No, wait a minute.
Oh, wait.
No, I bless you, Alex, Eric, because you make me sound not as cynical as I am. the whole thing is to kickstart a business going. This is basically a lazy way of raising money instead of doing it on your site. I mean, they have it. They've already got money. That's... And B, jumping on the Kickstarter bandwagon.
Yeah.
Are you telling me Gabe and Tycho didn't have a way of doing this on their own site?
Using their own system. They have server people. They have some pretty good server people.
The thing is, they think donations are not professional. And so they're not going to do donations.
Well, crowdsourcing is donations.
It's crowdsourcing. It's not donations.
They state that it was called begging when they first did it. I mean, okay, yeah, that point is made. The fact is that also Kickstarter is a venue for getting much more media attention. My God, Forbes has been covering this. Bloomberg has been covering this. It's 4 days old. I think it was a smart move. I mean, yeah, okay, they could have done the donations themselves. Would they have gotten as much publicity? Probably not, especially trying to get publicity outside of the webcomic sphere.
Well, that's true, but I still see it as Kickstarter is just another glorified PayPal that specializes totally on donation fundraising. And in my mind, it's okay, but at the same time, it feels a little weird because I think people should do whatever they want to with their own money. If they want to give money to people, just give it away, then that's their choice. Oh, I just want to give money away. You know, I don't think anyone should step in and stop people from doing whatever they want with their money. But at the same time, it makes me feel a little squicky at the same time. You know what I mean?
Well, it makes me feel the same way, but for a different reason. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, here's the thing with this that bugs me, though, is that it's weird not because that somebody is doing it, but because it's the Penny Arcade guys. And because they're doing it, they've already got a big following as it is. So they have the clout that, you know, this will attract the attention of a Forbes or something like that, and therefore gain more clout. But if you got, you know, any Joe user out there with his little webcomic that maybe gets 100 views a week or something, they're not going to be able to do this.
Yeah.
Right? So, again, it's kind of more of a problem I have with the Penny Arcade guys themselves, not because of their comic, but because they're setting a bar that 95, 99% of the webcomic people out there can't reach.
Well, and to me, it's a matter of, again, this is a Kickstarter thing. This is to start a business. You have your business plan. You have your things laid out. You have the merchandise and items that the people are prepaying for. This is basically an investment system. This is not what it's being used for by Penny Arcade. Well, they're using it as, they can call it whatever they want. It is a donation system. They've already said, if this works out, we'll do it next year as well.
Tom, yeah, you're getting hung up on semantics. If you look at a lot of the projects going into Kickstarter right now, in fact, if you go to the Kickstarter panel that's at San Diego right now, they are going to talk about having a continuing funding, not a Kickstarter, continuing funding for your project year after year by using Kickstarter as the venue for that. And
that's just weird to me because
that point it becomes a donation space.
Because it's called Kickstarter, should it be called progressively funding your project, kick the can down the road starter.
In my mind, I see it as it's. I've seen lots of Kickstarter projects. It's the Pebble smartwatch was one I actually put some money in because I actually thought that was a good idea and there was not a lot of money to put in. It was only $100. But other ones, it's there's one that's promising an Android fourth console to compete against Xbox and PlayStation that they got like millions of dollars.
That was their fastest funded project as of
now. I know, but it's also freaking vaporware because you can't tell me that all these major publishers are going to start writing for this. Mm-hmm. It's pretty on paper, but I know it's doomed.
That's a lot of the Kickstarter projects.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah. There's a lot of cases.
I mean, that goes back to if people want to throw their money away on something like this, that's fine. It's the 200-pound gorilla of people who already can fund their own freaking conventions coming in saying, well, we want more.
But they're not saying we want
more. I mean, the whole thing just...
Tom, but they're not saying we want more. They're saying we want exactly what we have right now, but we don't want ads.
So well, the thing is this. I already have Adblock, so let's see. I went to PennyArcade.com, and I have Adblock on, and wait, there are no ads.
Well, let's speak to that for a second. If you look at Penny Arcade's website, does anyone disagree that it's a pretty well-designed site, that's actually not that bad to look at, even with the ads?
Yeah.
Actually, I got to be honest with you. I like their website design before this one. This one, exactly. I don't like
as really?
Much. Yes,
Because the comic's not prominent, or what?
Well, I just don't like the darker colors. I don't like I don't like the tabbed head bar. What's the word I'm looking for?
Ben, you've seen much worse.
I have seen much worse, but these guys are supposed to be the musical and top hats of webcomics.
I mean, but you're quibbling now. It's a well-designed site. You think some of the colors are off fine, but
the ads are unobtrusive.
Yeah, they're already unobtrusive. I mean, that's the point I was trying to make. So this whole thing seems sort of silly, except that it's also it sets them up to do what they want.
Yes.
Now, is that where everybody's getting kind of that antsy feeling in their stomach? I mean, they're monopolizing something that seems to be really good?
They're not making anything new out of these funds, though. They're just taking ads off their website and reinstating some of their older content online, right? And,
well, here's the analogy.
Sean, what were you saying, Sean?
Here's the analogy I think would be appropriate here. This is these guys going from a commercial TV model like CBS or NBC to a donation model like NPR or PBS.
Yes.
Basically, all they're doing, they're just saying, let's scrap this ad revenue garbage and rely on donations.
And
instead of doing, you know, a donation rally thing once every 3 months or 6 months or whatever, they're doing one big one. Now, is Kickstarter necessarily, you know, to your point earlier, is Kickstarter necessarily the best venue for that? I don't know. But all they're doing, they're just basically switching a revenue model.
Yeah. I mean, there are two things here. I mean, first of all, there is no problem. This is switching back to the revenue model they had before. Penny Arcade started out with donations and was doing really well on donations. And it was the assumption of Gabe and Tycho that donations are not professional, which is something that drives me personally nuts. But and so they said, we don't want to do donations now that we have ad revenues, and they took donations off the site. That's fine. That's their choice. They're now coming back and saying, we're not doing donations. We're doing a Kickstarter, which is not donations, so we're still professional. And that just bothers me because they're just clinging to their beliefs. And the reason it was done on Kickstarter, I know Jason says, well, that's because it's a bigger venue. I think they're just doing it so that they don't have to say we're collecting donations. I think it's a personal ego thing.
And let's also take a look at the monetary value. I mean, they set a $250,000 goal to remove the banner ad. So you're telling me that they made $250,000 last year on the banner ad, or did they make $200,000 or $150,000?
Well, I can tell you right now,
they're making more money with this than they would be with ads, and that's, though, to me, the big thing.
And also, when you look at it, the number of the ad revenue for banner ads is actually going down in the last year. It's because well, we don't really know the actual model. I probably can find it out after another 10 minutes of research, but I've been looking at it, and banner ad revenue has actually been going down the last year.
Yeah, so it's a bonus for them, but I think we're making a really broad assumption here that $250,000 level is really what it costs them to equate to losing that banner ad.
And that amount to take that ad off is just to take the leaderboard ad off the home page, not the archives or any of the other internal pages on the website. There's a much higher level to get all of the ads scrubbed from the entire site.
And that's why I have AdBlock.
Yeah.
I only disable it on Hulu.
But you're killing other people. No. Oh, okay.
Let's go ahead and go on to our next topic of discussion, and that is our favorite Flipping Boy, yes, but Charles Gurian back in the news. We've said it all before, and he always finds a new way to bring us out of it. what is he going to do next week? I mean, is he sitting there saying, gee, we really need to raise these people's ratings up, so I'll do something completely stupid?
I'm going to be so sad.
We thought we were out, and he pulled us back in.
I'm going to be so sad when he's gone at this point. I mean, it's been 3 weeks where I didn't have to do anything looking for the news. Just type Charles Gurian on into a search engine, and there's the week's news. I'm done.
Through the years.
Now, I mean, I interrupted you, Alex, when you talked about this in the continuing news section. I mean, the whole reputation, was that his terminology, or did somebody else give that to him? Because
that was the name of the website that Gurian and his wife created, reputation.com.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Speaking of which, his wife is crazier than he is.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm sure
it would have to be.
I'm sure the verbal abuse and the horrible mockery that Charles Gurian has undergone in the wake of this oatmeal fiasco has been horrible and hurtful, but equating that to a sexual assault, I have a huge, gigantic problem with that.
So, well, I mean, there was a recent news story that had nothing to do with webcomics, believe it or not, about somebody from Comedy Central who runs Tosh.0, I think that's what it's called. comedy that rape is always funny. And I don't find this any different. Now, he had to go back and he had to apologize for that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, rape
is really annoying.
I don't see the difference between that.
It's a ratings grab.
What is it with people running to rape nowadays? It's such a weird thing. It's like, you know, something else is like, you know, equate it to like robbing a home or something. More nonviolent.
Like, you know, the price of gas right now is raping me every time I go to the gas station. No.
Don't even say that, because, you know, the damn fuel nozzle looks phallic enough as is.
Oh.
But no.
Gurian, folks.
First of all, I mean, these are the same people who equated all their critics to Nazis and Hitler. So this is sort of to be expected from this.
Well,
on the broader sense of, yeah, rape is kind of overused and over trivialized in our culture. And I think you know.
Well, I mean, the terminology, the phrase rape is, I mean, the actual action itself, definitely shouldn't be buried, but are there too many people trying to equate what little harms or little pitfalls they've had to something that's one of the worst crimes that can be committed?
Yeah.
And what I find absolutely hilarious about this whole thing is he's trying to make internet trolling illegal. And I know some of the people here have been trolled in the past and all that, but really the whole thing is you can't really control the internet. You can sort of steer the internet in a direction, but after that, it's out of everyone's hands. The internet is simply is.
His argument is that's only because we don't have laws to sue everyone for huge amounts of money when they do this. If we could go after every individual person and sue them and there was laws on the books, we wouldn't have this problem. And that's bizarre.
England tried this. There was actually a show about this, about internet bullying, where like this English talk show host is trying to hunt down his internet bully and actually finds him down the street and tries to start a fight with him. It's the most hilarious show I ever saw.
Yeah. But yeah, it's silly.
In the second part of the story, I mean, we have to talk about this too. Let me take the quote from what you've got in the show notes here. Charles Garion has said, "While it's not the largest sum of money I have ever had a substantial role in raising, it's the first time I've ever seen it go to charity, and I think it's great." Now, you had a great line before the show.
Yeah, I was saying
establishing the guy's an idiot. I don't think that this is there's no more discussion.
Yeah, I was just saying we should attach magnets to Charles Carrion because he could power the entire U.S. for a year with all the spin he's putting on this. It's just ridiculous.
Well, actually, what you do is you put a piece of buttered toast on the back of a cat and drop it.
Yeah,
and then the cat will just stop short, just start spinning.
Yeah, but I mean, no,
the perpetual motion engine.
Charles Carrion doesn't, I mean, I've said this before, he's approaching this as if he's living in the 1950s, where he can just put out press releases and there's not going to be any feedback. There's not going to be a group of people saying this is not right. It's not going to make him look bad because there's only one newspaper in town and he's got friends there. You know, and so we see all this stuff on MSNBC, on these big newspapers where he's giving these interviews saying things that are ridiculous. And everyone gets really upset about it, and he's just approaching this as if out of a different time period.
And in the meantime, I mean, he's getting airtime for being a complete and utter idiot.
Yeah.
So let's nail this down to the question that's on everyone's mind. Okay, Charles Carrion versus Jack Thompson, five rounds, no holds barred.
Oh.
What, this is a fight or just a fight to the crazy or a fight to the death?
Stopped. Carrion.
No, I mean, you know, the fight would end up with them suing each other to see who actually won.
No, but Carrion stopped. Carrion had a moment of clarity and he stopped. He's now
Carrion did not carry on.
Yes. And now he's trying to spit it, but he knows
with the pun.
Like I said, I mean, I don't think he stopped. I think he just paused for round two.
He's in his neutral corner. He's getting the water. He's ready to spit.
There was a great quote online about this. They said, "Very rarely does someone in the middle of digging their hole stop, take a moment to reflect, and then go back to digging."
It happens more often than you think. Yeah. I mean, it's
I can't say that.
It happens more often than you think. Like the aforementioned Jack Thompson. I mean, he only stopped after his bar license was officially taken away forever.
Yeah, but what happened here is Charles Carrion had to get legal counsel for all the suits he was involved with, and it's pretty clear that legal counsel said you will lose tons of money if you pursue this. And I
think a lot of his friends from law school told him to stop early on.
Yes, they did. But I think when he got legal counsel, something clicked where the guy says, "There's no way you can win this. There's no way we can win."
It's possible, but I mean, we've all seen how Carrion's wife is. I mean, she's crazier than him and Thompson put together. So we'll have to see. We will keep everybody updated on these stories as more happens in the future, and we know it will. But let's go ahead and our next topic discussion is about Twitter building a media business using other people's content. Now, this is over from our friends at GigaOM. And quite frankly, when we're talking about expanding themselves out with expanded tweets, which means what, 200 characters now, 300 characters?
No, expanded tweets is Tom, expanded tweets is if you're tweeting something that comes from one of their partner websites, you can now open up a mini article of that partner website. So they are starting to make partnerships with the people they're stealing the content from. So
and this is coming right on the heels of them removing the third-party APIs and allowing others to write applications for in conjunction with Twitter. Now, I mean, expanding out and becoming a media from other people's content, I mean, YouTube made a media empire off of that. So, I mean, you can't say that it's too bad, but what sort of benefit are we looking at from it?
Well, I think the basic problem we're looking at is the same thing that, I believe, if I remember right, that article that is linked to is refers to this. It's the same essential problem that Google has run into, that AOL has ran into, is all these other internet companies. They come up with these ideas. They put something out there for free because it's just this little guy working in a garage or something, and then it gets big, and then somebody comes in and says, well, how do you monetize that?
Yeah.
Now, in our interview with BetaWorks CEO John Borthwick had said that, quote, the grain of Twitter moves with the grain of the web. It's similar to Google in that it's a discovery platform that pushes you out. Now they said we're going to be a media company, but the grain of that moves in the opposite direction, trying to keep people in one place to almost create a walled garden. There's another story that was in the news this week about former powerhouse Dig, where everybody was digging comments and trading them out back and forth, is being sold piecemeal. Its days aren't long dead. Are we going to be seeing something similar like that with Twitter, with them not seeming to have a clear path anymore?
Well, they never had a clear path. As Sean stated, there's no way to monetize Twitter the way people are currently using Twitter. Right. Because it's short, and it's very, and people are making their own apps, and that's how people want to use it. And there's not a really good path to say, here's how we make money off of this. I mean, the best they've done is promoted tweets, but that doesn't really fly that well because most people ignore them.
Yeah, and what Google did right in that sense, you know, Google originally was just a search engine, and that was free, and that is still free. There's they've got the ads that come up whenever, but there's not a really heavy monetization of it because you click on the links and you're going off to somewhere else that's not Google. And so what they basically have done is created an entire line of products that are totally separate from search, right? You do the Google Docs, they've got the iGoogle, which I guess is going away now because they haven't figured out how to monetize that either. they've got the Google Plus now. And that all these other things that they're doing are basically just totally completely separate, but largely separate from their basic original function of search, because they could never quite figure out how to make a good profit at that.
Well, Sean, I think that there's a key difference. I mean, a pretty nice ad revenue when it was coming up. And then came the stereo stuff. Twitter just isn't making any money. I don't, like Eric said, the promoted tweets are really the only thing that they're probably paying for. And... Mm-hmm. And really, what are they making from that? Most people, at least me, every time I read it, I censor them out automatically. So I don't think that Twitter's ever going to be at the point that Google is. They're just, they don't have that influx of money unless they open up an IPO, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think any internet company's in a big rush to open up an IPO again after the last time. And by the way, if anyone wants to know what really happened with that, I'll tell you. Because I know exactly why that whole Facebook thing fell apart.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah. You want to know?
No. Let's move on.
Oh. Okay.
We lost Tom. So we're going to move on to our final discussion topic of today, talking about courts making it legal for users to resell and download their content. Now, this is the idea that the court came in here and said, in Europe, if you buy content, you're allowed to sell it to someone else. And this could be a lot of problems for a lot of publishers out there.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a really weird idea, because the biggest problem is a lot of these judges don't understand technology. I mean, and especially in Europe, it's a little bit different. It's the biggest issue I see is how the idea of what a downloaded content is. If it's something that's still on the internet, but you're viewing it through your account, like for instance, I have an Amazon Prime membership, and I bought Amazon Prime movies to watch, and I'm watching it, but I haven't downloaded it, but I bought it.
Yeah, well, but I mean, with Amazon Prime, they actually say you're renting it. You're not buying it. And this is what they're saying, is that this ruling is just going to force publishers to go to the rental model and saying that you're not buying this, you're renting this. The same way that all of your comics in Comixology, you don't own any of those. You're renting them. You're renting the right for them, and in the service agreements, Comixology says we can pull that comic from you at any moment, at any time, for any reason, because you don't own it. The specific ruling says any app, any program, any data you download, you own, and you have the right to resell. So it's an interesting thing, because if you download a PDF, you theoretically should be able to resell that PDF in Europe. Mm-hmm. But since you can go ahead.
I'm sorry. The inherent problem with that, though, is that you're equating a digital object with a physical one, right?
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
I understand where the argument comes from, because if you have a book, a physical book, with pages and, you know, made out of dead trees and all that, that's your property. You can do whatever you want with that. You can destroy it, you can sell it, you can give it away, whatever. But that's not how digital works. I mean, it's just, there's not, if you download a digital comic or a digital book or an app or anything, that's just a theory, that's just information.
Right.
There's not a physical housing to that information. And the way computers work, the basic function of a computer is to copy and move data.
Right.
So it's the analogy that they're using is inherently invalid, is basically what it boils down to.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because just to view it locally, it has to be cached, and to be cached, it's copied over. Are they saying anything that's in the cache is just yours, and if you can figure out a way to crack that cache and make a local copy that you can move somewhere else, that makes it okay, because the cache automatically clears itself after a certain amount of time, or when you fill it with something else? Is that what they're
saying? That's essentially what they're saying.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
It really is. And there's just no thought put into it. I mean, I think this is a legislation that's probably going to be swept out later once people realize just how ridiculous it is. There's just no way that you can, when you buy something, you have a receipt. When you buy a house, you have a deed. When you have data, how are they going to confirm that this is yours? There's no system set up.
Well, the biggest problem with that is
your ideas.
Well, the biggest problem with that is, let's say it's scary. I have an Android phone. I have a Galaxy Nexus. And let's say I go to Google Play and I want to buy an app. The thing is, if I buy an app, I don't get an APK file. I get the file automatically downloaded, installed, and then deleted automatically by the Google Play app. So I never really have that APK file. I could probably figure out a way to crack and get the APK file itself to download, but I don't.
If I want to
sideload APK files, I can, because Google allows me to do that. But it's like I said, when you buy an app, usually with a phone, you don't get an APK file, or with a computer, if you buy a game from Steam, you don't get an EXE file that you can figure out how to get in, unless you like take a good 10 minutes, do some research and find out where they put those packages and how to convert those.
Right. Well, on that note, I think we're going to bring our fearless leader back in, who got dropped from the call. Ben, thanks for being on.
No problem.
Sean, thanks for being on as well.
My pleasure, always.
Tom, you here with us?
I am back with you all. One of the hazards of broadcasting live from San Diego Comic-Con. Out here in beautiful San Diego, California, where the weather is terrific and the legs are worn to enough from all the walking.
Okay. Well, will you take us out of here today, Tom?
Well, I heard you, and we've done all these thank yous for being here since I'm back late.
We have thanked everyone, yes. Well, we haven't thanked
terrific.
Alex, and we haven't thanked Alex for being here. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex, for joining us in, like always.
You're welcome. If anybody is in Columbus next weekend, I'm going to be at TrotCon, which is a My Little Pony convention happening at the OSU Ohio Union. I'll be in the Artist Alley, so come say hi.
Just follow the sound of squealing.
August 4th, I will be at the Dallas Strip Con. I'll have a table. I'll have things to give away. From the sounds of it, I will be on a panel, so that'll be interesting.
Nice.
Okay, that leaves Jason, our news editor, for bringing us such terrific stories again this week. Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, Tom. All right, everybody, have a great weekend.
And of course, your friend and his, Eric Kimball from BladeBunny.com.
Thank you very much, Tom.
And that leaves me. I'm Thomas Moore, your host, coming here from San Diego Comic-Con. And apparently you didn't hear the squealing when I got my limited edition 2012 Hasbro My Little Pony Generation 4. And I want to thank y'all for joining us. We'll be here next week with more information, and we've got some special guests lined up for shows in the future. So we will all see you in the Bunny Papers.